This is Morgan Michael, welcoming you to Kindsight 101, the podcast, where you'll hear from world-renowned educational leaders about the mobilizing power of kindness, together by challenging our assumptions and venturing beyond the status quo in education. We can make a big impact, one small act at a time.
School culture should just always be something that we're thinking about and working towards.
Hans Appel is a counselor at Enterprise Middle School in Washington State, which just recently won the 2018 Whole Child Award for Washington State, the 2018 Global Class Act Award for Kindness, and is now a finalist for the PBIS Film Festival for a video on their award-winning culture. Hans is also a blogger, supervises a student-led podcast, and loves all things kindness in creating positive school culture. In this episode, we talk about going beyond the limits of the 21st century model of education to create school cultures that value the individual and celebrate kindness. You'll learn specific strategies that can positively shift your school culture and actionable tips for encouraging excellence. Also, you'll learn the three essential questions that every school should be asking as they set out to create their culture. You can find Hans on awardwinningculture.com or by seeking him out on social media. All right. Well, Hans Appel, thank you so much for joining me today on Kindsight 101. It's great to have you.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here. I'm a huge fan of the work that you're doing and what you're putting into the world. So I'm glad to be talking with you right now.
Well, likewise. Thank you. So you're a counselor at Enterprise Middle School in Washington State, a school that's won a ton of awards. And I just want to dive into a moment that you had this past February on Valentine's Day. So as your school district had its fourth snow day in a row, which is pretty nuts, basically students wouldn't be in school at this time. You planned some really cool and unexpected events, some things like basically delivering yummy home baked cookies, I think. You had pizza delivery. You went and made home visits to families. This is above and beyond. What inspired you to do this? And why is it important to you to develop kindness in school through your own servant leadership?
Well, that's an awesome question. Back to the Valentine's specifically. We've really been hit by Snowmageddon around here. So I think it's the most snow this Tri-Cities area, which is basically Eastern Washington, has received ever. So we were going on a number of days in a row with dealing with it, and we were kind of missing our kids, and we were worried about our kids. Some of our kids obviously deal with poverty, and, you know, coming to school is part of how they get their food and, you know, just everything else that they need in life. So my wife, who's also a teacher, Jennifer, teaches at the same school, and we just kind of got to talking, and we're like, what can we do? So one of the days we ended up coming in and stuffing lockers with treats and these little messages that said, you know, in case anybody hasn't told you today, we love you, kind of thing. And so we stuffed those in everybody's locker, thinking that we'd be back at school the next day and it'd be a fun little surprise. And what ended up happening is that, you know, snow just kept piling up, and suddenly those no school days started adding up. And so we were like, okay, we got to do something else here, because, you know, these kids, they need a little happiness brought into their world. So we basically identified 12 students that we felt like, you know, most maybe needed an outreach, students that maybe weren't as connected to school or that we were worried about, because it had been, you know, almost a week with the weekends and stuff since we had seen them. Yeah, we made treats, kind of homemade snacks, and ended up going and picking up a dozen pizzas and just went around and said hello and, you know, dropped off a book to read and some food and some snacks and, you know, just tried to kind of bring some positive cheer into their world. So that was really fun. I think, you know, to your big overarching question about kindness, I think is, you know, why then, right? And I think for us at our school and kind of the folks that, you know, are really passionate here about creating amazing school culture, it in some ways it felt like any other day. You know, we're trying to do these same kinds of things where we're making kindness normal every day. So we don't really look at, you know, things like Kindness Week or, you know, specific kindness days or anti-bullying days as, you know, any more extraordinary than any other day. Like, we kind of see every day as a day to shape our school culture.
I love that. What are some of the elements of award-winning culture for you? What do you think are some of the foundational elements that makes your school so amazing?
So yeah, we're kind of founded on, I guess I would say, three overarching questions that sort of drive kind of everything we do. And they're kind of broken down into character, excellence, and community. So with character, it's what will you do the right thing? Excellence is will you do your very best? And community is what will you do for others today? And I think they all kind of relate in some, you know, capacity to award-winning culture. We started kind of branding ourselves as award-winning culture because of some of the awards we won. But really, creating an award-winning culture has nothing to do with actual awards. It's really about inspiring a mindset of positive intentionality and action through character, excellence, and community. So, you know, when we start kind of thinking about some of the things that maybe get in our way from, you know, creating the culture that we hope to create, you know, first we have to kind of break down, well, what is culture? Culture is how people actually behave. Whereas climate, you know, is more like the feeling. So how a place feels. And I think the two sometimes get confused when we're talking about school culture. But when we talk about award-winning culture, we're thinking about how are we thinking about the behavior that we're doing. So, you know, a lot of folks, I think, are sort of looking for maybe a recipe, like this is the specific strategies that you need to do to create an amazing, exceptional school culture. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, there's a lot of things that you can do to enhance your school culture. But I also think maybe it's not so much about creating the right recipe as it is about seeing yourself as a chef. And what I mean by that is, you know, you have a tremendous amount of influence on whatever your circle of influence is. And so oftentimes people will say, I want to change the whole school culture. And maybe what they need to start with is just focusing on their circle of influence. So, you know, we think about within a school, there's all these little individual pockets. And one of the things that I love that James Hunter, who's an author, wrote The Servant and the Culture, he talks about, you know, going out to these amazing companies all over the world, working with Fortune 500 companies. And he says, no matter where he goes, no matter how toxic the situation is, there's these pockets that are exceptional. And so what they've realized, those folks that are kind of leading those pockets, are that they have a tremendous amount of influence over whatever their circle is. And so, you know, we think about, well, a teacher has tremendous influence within their classroom, right? Or a coach has tremendous influence, maybe in the, you know, 12 kids that are on their particular team, or within a PLC, or within a, you know, a mm-hmm. family at home. You know, mm-hmm. it can be small circles. I think sometimes in my role as a counselor or even as a building principal, you know, we think in terms of entire schools. And then to kind of expand that out, even superintendents thinking in terms of an entire district. But really, it's just about breaking some of the things down that you're already probably doing in your own individual environments and applying more intentionality to those.
That's such an important point. And I think this idea that it doesn't have to be necessarily, the change doesn't have to originate from the quote unquote top. It can actually be really organic and grassroots from the classroom teacher or from a small pocket of individuals. It can even be students too, right?
Absolutely. And I think when you start seeing that, you know, your culture is shifting and it's becoming kind of special, that's when you see the ideas coming from places like students, so that it isn't even adult driven. We're lucky because kind of as we started building our culture and it became more this is what we do and this is a normal thing around here, I think it started to empower students to come up with really exceptional ideas. One idea that comes to mind this year when we came back to school, we had a seventh grade boy who realized that, you know, it's really challenging to open your sixth grade locker when you come to middle school and you're beginning. And one of the hardest things is to adjust to that whole locker experience. And so his idea was, let's stuff like little goodie bags into each incoming sixth grader's locker as a little surprise. Aww. Once, you know, they're there and they can open up, you know, their locker. And so normally what happens is students come in August with their parents. There's some anxiety with that. They're walking around trying to figure out where things are and how to open their locker and just sort of get adjusted before school starts. And so he came up with the idea of, yeah, let's have some little surprise in there that kind of welcomes them to Enterprise.
What a great idea.
And how many years, you know, I've worked in middle school and people I've worked with have worked around here. And of course, no adult has ever thought of that idea. So I think sometimes when we empower, you know, the people around us that they're a part of this mission, then that's when the really exceptional stuff comes about.
For sure. So I'd like to talk a little bit about the importance of branding. I know that some people feel that it's a bit controversial to think of school as something that can be maybe marketed through branding, but I kind of agree with the idea of people like us do things like this and how that can, like you said, create this organic, basically the organic creation of these wonderful ideas that fall in line with your school brand. So talk to me a little bit about how a school, I mean, you did talk about the questions, but what are some steps that a school could take to develop a unified culture or brand if they are feeling like they want to do that as a group?
Yeah, I really agree with you that it is critical because, you know, something Beth Huff, who wrote Lead Like a Pirate, love that book. And something that she talks about in that book is, you know, if you don't tell your school story, somebody else will. And the reality is if you're not the one telling it, it may be a story that you don't really like and that matches your true brand. So the reality is we have to tell our school story. You know, we all see different things in the news and in the media, and that may not be accurate of what people are experiencing every day in your building. So I think it is critical. And I think part of telling your story is branding yourself. You know, we call ourselves Wildcat Nation. You know, we're founded kind of in those three questions, but I think it has to happen organically. And I think, you know, most, when we talk about school culture, most of the time that takes 3 to 5 years to build. So, that's our experience with it. It took a while. And you know, I think anytime that you involve people, at the table to help build something, then they end up supporting it. Right. And so we've kind of seen that over the last few years as we really took a strong approach with, you know, bringing in social emotional learning curriculum and character curriculum through a Character Strong program. And then, you know, figuring out all the pieces to support that and you know, how that would essentially educate the whole child. I think all of that became part of our brand. And then, you know, using social media, right, and using storytelling to be able to share out all the positivity that's happening. Because the reality is there's positivity everywhere, in every school and in every, you know, community.
Right.
But I think sometimes we get so focused on, you know, seeing negative, right, and not actually looking for all the good stuff. And so I think sometimes that kind of impacts everybody's, you know, ability to just focus on kindness, service, and empathy and the things that we all know are critical to all of our well-being.
Sure. And I think that's such an important point, this idea that really we come away from an experience with a story. So if we're really intentional about pulling out the really positive elements, that actually adds to the story that we craft, right?
And absolutely.
Yeah. And so I'd love to talk a little bit more about the influence of Character Strong and even the PBIS rewards. How has that influence really aided in the transformation of your culture?
I think Character Strong really gives us a framework. So we teach 8 character traits, and you know, it's things like patience and commitment and respect and kindness, and those things become foundational. And so every Friday, students are learning specific social, emotional, and character ed lessons. And so that's been huge. It gives adults a common language, you know, both at the educator level as well as the parent level. So we're all speaking the same kinds of, you know, verbiage. Mm-hmm. It also, you know, it's kind of grounded students, I think, in terms of some of the mental health needs. You know, I think it's no secret that anxiety is you know, reaching kind of epic proportions.
Yes.
You know, I've heard that the average student today has as much anxiety as the average psychiatric patient of the 1950s.
Isn't that amazing?
Oh. I mean, that's alarm, right? It's alarming. I think, you know, Dr. Borba in her book Unselfie points out, you know, the huge drop in empathy, you know, amongst college age students, you know, really in the last 12 years. It's like a 40% drop in empathy. And we know that, you know, as anxiety goes up, empathy goes down. Mm-hmm. And all of that means we as educators and parents and community have to come together to figure out how are we going to, you know, provide this support. And I think that's what Character Strong has really done a great job of helping us do. I think PBS Rewards comes in the sense that we're able to not only teach the stuff through Character Strong, but then also follow up with, you know, specific rewards to support some of the character traits that we want to see. So when we see kids, you know, acting kind, and we see kids, you know, going out of their way to demonstrate humility and, you know, patience and all the different things that are so relevant to our society, then we can also reward those through a really cool little app that PBS Rewards has created. And then they can redeem those for, you know, fun things around the school.
And it's not always actually tangible things. It's actually experiences, right? Or it's opportunities to connect with one another. There's lots of different ways that you can do that. Is that correct?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think, you know, you bring up experience. You know, that kind of relates back to one of your earlier questions about, you know, strategies. Is I think, you know, one of the keys that we've had in our school is really experiential learning. So what I see with a lot of like programs that specifically target school culture or anti-bullying things, it's a lot of talking at kids. Hmm. What I like about what we're doing, and I think, you know, a lot of this comes from programs like Character Strong that are founded in kind of an experiential model, is it's really putting students out there to live it. And so we do things like we do a thing called a golden broom, which is basically like a demonstration of service to those who serve us. Mm. And, it's an opportunity to go and, you know, maybe, pay tribute to the bus drivers, you know, bring them, treats and say thank you and just kind of show them love. We do the same thing with our custodians or our paraprofessionals or our, cafeteria ladies or secretary. I mean, whoever is in our building that, you know, is sort of targeted that week for the golden broom. And so that's opportunities for some of our students to really get out there and kind of live kindness, right? And practice it. And then the really cool thing, kind of relating back to the branding, is obviously not everybody is experiencing that moment of doing something really amazing for somebody else. So if we can then tell that story and say, hey, this is what, you know, this is what Wildcat Nation did today. We went and spent 30 minutes doing the custodian's job and, you know, look at all this cool stuff we did for him. Then everybody in the school, everybody at home, you know, parent-wise and in our community can then experience how that kindness felt and what we're about.
Right. And, you know, like the research shows that kindness is contagious. You know, you get that oxytocin boost, and even just by watching somebody do something that's in service of someone else, right? And so I just think that's such a beautiful thing too. I know I've spoken with a number of kindness gurus, people like Barbara Gruner and, you know, Lori McIntosh, and they've talked about the fact, and even Tamara Leder have talked about mm-hmm. the fact that sometimes there's this perception that when we share these kind acts, that it's kind of the opposite of being humble. But what would you say to that?
Yeah, not at all. I really think, you know, that's such a critical piece, because I think there's so much that can be learned just from being an observer of kindness. Like I'll take specifically the power of when we did the custodian, last year, and there was an entire room full of seventh graders watching and experiencing the joy, not only of the students that are working for the custodian, but also the joy that the custodian has in that situation. I mean, that's how humbling for him, right? To have everybody show him this incredible act of love and service, and hey, I see you and I get you and you're one of us, and you know, everybody can take part in that.
Yes.
And so I think you're right. I think the benefits health-wise and you know, just kind of the impact that has been huge. Relating that a little bit to, like, we created a student-led podcast this year called Award-Winning Culture.
Yes, it's awesome, by the way.
And we're having fun with it. And one of the things, and maybe I don't have a ton of time to talk about it, but one of the things that we've seen with that is when you create an authentic audience, man, it just really changes the game. So it stops being, you know, just an assignment that somebody turns in, like a typical grading situation where only one person, maybe the teacher, sees your work. In this case, the world sees these kids' work, right? And so they're essentially grading whether this is a good episode or not. Mm-hmm. And it's been super powerful because we've discovered something we call a secondary experiential learning effect. And so what that is when a student, you know, behaves in a way and then goes on the podcast and talks about it and reflects upon it, there's other people that then listen to that experience, and their behavior can then be changed.
Right.
And so we experienced this earlier in the year. We had some students that decided, hey, I'm going to go sit with some of those kids that don't have somebody to sit with. Right. And they had been sort of challenged by one of our interview guests that we had on. And so on a later podcast, they ended up talking about it and sharing the experience and how it felt and how it was fun, and they're going to continue to do it. And all that's great. But the cool thing is, a month later, we had kids from other schools reaching out to us going, hey, I heard you guys talking about this on a podcast a while back. And so because of that, I decided to go do this in my lunchroom.
Oh, and there they see that they're...
That's power.
Yes, because they see that their actions actually matter and influence other people, which I think is
absolutely
one of the most important lessons that we can learn about kindness is, and really any kind of influence that we have, is this idea that, yeah, your actions actually matter. You don't have to be rich. You don't have to be famous or anything else. Just you alone in the choices that you make is enough to inspire other people.
And what a gift to give students, right? I mean, to have that knowledge that my little actions actually play this big role in other people's lives, right? And again, you don't even always know who you're touching. You know, we think about our own circle, and there were students that were listening to that podcast that certainly weren't in our podcast students' circle at all, right? But the impact still, you know, it's kind of that pebble in the pond theory, right? It's like, is far reaching.
Yes. I do want to touch on that a little bit more. So you wrote in a recent blog post that this world of big name stars shining a light on kindness, we often overlook the impact that we can have in our daily lives. And so your wife had this experience with the cool shoes comment. What did you learn from Jen's student in that situation? And can you tell a little bit about this cool shoes comment?
Yeah. So this was, it's kind of funny. It was years ago. I think it was when she first started as a teacher. There was kind of an offhand thing where a kid walked up. You know, she made some comment about, hey, cool shoes, and didn't think anything of it. Unbeknownst to her, the student had, you know, all this inner turmoil about you know, how they looked that day and how her shoes looked. And she had gotten in a fight with her parents about the shoes and was really upset about having to wear the shoes. And literally the very first thing in the morning before her first period class was Jen standing out in the hallway going, "Hey, cool shoes." And years later, the cool thing is that sixth grade student moved on and eventually wrote an essay about Jen as a teacher and the impact that she had and how that whole experience kind of, spinning her day around into a positive ended up being one of the catalysts. I think there was many catalysts, but one of the catalysts to that sixth grade student eventually becoming a teacher herself. Mm. And so, and Jen knew none of the background on what happened that morning. She didn't even know that this student, had all this experience with her. It was just, kind of an offhand, comment that she probably makes to students every day. There's lots of amazing teachers that greet their kids at the door and interact and personally connect. And I think it was a powerful reminder to me and to her that, gosh, every little thing we do actually impacts other people. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we're probably not, I would say most of the time, probably we're not aware of, what those actions were, but to be kind of given that information and that it was kind of a gift, I think, to Jen that, hey, this thing that you did, 10 years ago that you probably don't even remember, it totally mattered to me. And it not only, transformed my day, as a sixth grader, struggling just to survive, mm-hmm. like all middle school kids, mm-hmm. but, kind of fueled my passion for, helping others through teaching.
I just think that's such a great story and a really powerful message too, because quite often when we're bogged down by the day-to-day, it's really easy to forget that we are in this position of power as educators or as educational leaders, right? And so our yeah. actions and our words hold so much weight. And to know that those little comments, those tiny little interactions can truly have lasting impact on kids. So I just think that's such a great illustration of that. I would like to switch gears just a little bit and talk about this concept of fear in the classroom and how we can set up a classroom of belonging and of safety. So I know that you recently wrote a blog post yep. outlining some of these types of fears. I believe you outlined three. Can you speak more to that and how we can sort of create these cultures that cut down on that fear, cut down on that anxiety, and really boost the creativity that kids need to be innovative and to feel like they're living out their days kind of with integrity at school?
Yeah. Boy, you're right. I think actions in a classroom have big ramifications. And I think, when we think about, just what all goes into a person's experience, it goes so far beyond what we're aware of. And so one of the things I was writing about recently was, the ability to be able to ask questions and set up your classroom in a way that feels safe and feels comfortable. And, even knowing that you're doing everything you possibly can, students, just like all of us, bring, different experiences from other settings, with them into the classroom. So I talk about, there's kind of this perceived, experienced or witnessed, fear that sometimes students have about being able to ask questions. And so sometimes that can be things that have happened in the past, a previous teacher or a previous experience with somebody. Sometimes it can be actually something that they personally experienced with that particular teacher that may have kept them from being comfortable and able to, seek help and ask questions and things like that. And sometimes it can just be witnessed. So if I see a comment that maybe is a sarcastic comment or something that, one of my classmates, some feedback or response to something doesn't go the way that, it should or it can. Sometimes students perceive that, hey, a teacher is going to be a certain way if I ask for help or if I ask for questions. The interesting thing is it's not just a phenomenon that's specific to classes. It's really specific all over the place. I experience it as a counselor, knowing that, every other counselor that a particular student has experienced plays a role in how they perceive me and how their experience is going to go with me. The same is true for other educators in their settings. I think the really interesting thing beyond that is parents bring in these same, fears and experiences and things that they've lived through, as well as fellow educators. So, I think there's a variety of those, reasons for the fear, but I think just having that knowledge that, it's not all just about the experience that you're creating within your room, but it's also about, people bring their own experiences, both perceived, witnessed, or actually experienced, to that setting.
Yes, and their own sort of narratives about what it means to be in a classroom and how they might be received. That's so interesting. And I think that is important, because I think there are times when it can feel like a long slog in September, or, when you're first starting out and you go, why isn't this immediate? And you have to sort of take that into account, like what people are coming into the situation with already in terms of their assumptions and their story. That's a really important piece.
I think it relates back to empathy, right? I mean, empathy is not only a skill that we're hopefully teaching our youth, but that we as educators are really, grappling with. And so I think being able to put yourself in a student's shoes, walking through the door day one, back to the shoe comment. I think being able to kind of put yourself in their shoes is huge. I think, imagining what it feels like to be a parent walking into a parent teacher conference, what anxieties come with that. Imagining, being a teacher, taking a risk in a staff meeting and sharing a thought, so as a leader, how am I supporting that? Right. I mean, so I think empathy is one of those things that we never become perfectly like, hey, I've got that down, right? It's like, it's something we're always working at and reflecting on.
Absolutely. Constant practice, right?
Yep.
I would like to touch base on the concept of self-expression and reflection as an educator as well. Talk to me a little bit about your journey into blogging and the Twitter that you do and the podcasting. How has writing and regular posting helped you to serve your students and your school community better?
So I think because, we were starting to get quite a bit of attention for our school culture and what we were creating, several folks had reached out to me to start blogging for them in different platforms and whatnot. And what I found was, telling specific stories and things like that really seems to resonate with people. I think, there's a whole theory out there that storytelling is just so powerful in connecting with others. And so I was able to sort of experience that in some early blogs that I had done. And I think that kind of prompted me to start, sharing our school story, and learnings and things that we were kind of figuring out as we went. And so I started that and started a website called awardwinningculture.com. And one of the things that, you talk about reflection, which I think is huge. I think the other thing that sometimes gets overlooked with blogging is accountability. Because sometimes I think, I'm writing for me more than anybody else. Like, I'm writing so that this is something that stays in my conscience, where I'm thinking about it and focusing on it and reflecting, and it kind of stays there as a reminder. The way that I sort of introduced to the world that I had this crazy idea of creating a student-led podcast with 12-year-olds is I wrote a blog about it.
Right.
And I just said, I don't know anything about this, but I know this is a really good idea, and I know our kids need this, and this is going to be awesome. And I wrote a whole post about, this is going to happen. I'm going to roll it out in August. We're going to do it. and I don't even know how I'm going to do it. I have no equipment. I have nothing. And so for me, it was like, it was a way to kind of hold myself accountable. Like, it's out in the world, right? Like, our students knew this is, you know, out there. This is being talked about. Other educators knew. In fact, mm-hmm. some people, quite a few people, thought there's no way you can pull this off. Mm-hmm. And so it was a way to go, no, I'm going to do this, and I'm going to draw a timeline. Right now, I'm kind of doing that in the sense of I have you know, incredible aspirations to write a book, mm-hmm. and so part of my accountability to myself is, you know, not only the consistent writing and reflecting, but also, you know, putting that out in the world. I think sometimes when we put our goals and we put our beliefs and thoughts out there, we can better hold ourselves accountable, but then others can also kind of say, well, this is what you're about, right? This is what you think.
There is something about writing things down goal-wise that really does, it propels you forward. It also gives you a bit of a roadmap in terms of what's important to you. So you can align your decisions against that goal and go, is this actually pushing me in the right direction? Or is it something that maybe I need to say no to right now because it doesn't serve that purpose? And it just helps streamline your thinking, right? So I really appreciate that aspect of writing and journaling.
I love what you just said there. And it really relates back to what my thinking is about school culture. I kind of feel like school culture should just always be something that we're thinking about and working towards. And so I really like what you just said there about, you know, the ability to reflect. And I think that has kind of crystallized that roadmap for us as we kind of work through, okay, this is how we're going to do this. And, you know, we're going to keep this on the forefront of everybody's, you know, thoughts. So mm-hmm. it's not like school culture isn't like, okay, we've arrived and now we're good. Now we can work on the next thing. School culture is something that has to happen, and we have to behave and think and feel daily.
Yeah. Right? And I really like that distinction that you made earlier about the difference between the culture being the behavior and the everyday we do this, and then the climate being the resulting feeling, the climate, the feel right. that you get when you walk into a school. And I think that's a really, really important distinction, because you're right, people do confuse the two. And so before we do move on, is there anything that you'd like to add or say to the listeners about some of the projects that you're doing or about your belief system around culture building?
Yeah, I guess just the biggest thing is how important this work is. You know, I was a kid, and I've written about this a little bit, but I was a kid that came from a challenging home. And, you know, in many ways, it was kind of an abusive situation. And school was just an amazing outlet for me. You know, so I think about, you know, playing sports and teachers and educators and friends and peers and all kinds of positive experiences that I had as sort of a respite from the chaos that I experienced at home. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think I don't know how to word this, but I think in education, there's a lot of focus on content and testing and getting people ready for the next step. And I think sometimes we all just need to pause and realize that the most important work we're doing is this school culture. Because, you know, if we get, you know, the right mindset and the right, you know, experience for kids, they can do incredible things. Mm-hmm. I always say, you know, basically kindness is like the ozone layer of emotional safety that mm-hmm. allows for learning. Mm-hmm. Right? There is no learning without that kind of safety net. And so I guess what I would say to listeners is, you know, I'm passionate about this, and I know there's a lot of folks out there that are inordinately passionate. And it's something that really it requires your daily time and mm-hmm. your daily energy. And it's worth it, because there's kids every day that show up just to see you.
Mm. That's really powerful. I think that's so important. The fact that the most important work that you do is not always the content. And I really do believe that. I totally agree with you. What does kindness mean to you? I mean, you just talked about it a little bit in terms of the ozone layer and all of that, but what is kindness to you? What does it mean?
there's so many cool definitions. One that has stuck with me recently is to give without remembering and to receive without forgetting. And I really like how it kind of wraps in some of that gratitude into the kindness part. Kindness is huge. I think, you know, we've kind of touched on that. I think it's one of those things that allows everything else to be possible. I really enjoyed your interview with Houston Kraft. He's a good friend of mine.
Thanks.
He does a nice job. He does a nice job breaking down nice and kind.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's huge. I think, you know, we think in terms of nice so often, but when we can really get specific with, you know, what are the individual skills that people need to create kindness, it changes our world.
Absolutely.
So I'm really stuck on that whole, you know, we need to be reminded more than we need to be taught.
Yeah. I love that quote too. Give without remembering and receive without forgetting. That's really good. I've not heard that before, but it makes so much sense. And it enables you to move on too and move through without kind of being hung up in any direction, right? What trait or superpower should an educator lead with in order to be effective?
Character. That's probably the simplest word I could use. I think great leaders have exceptional character. That's part of why we're so passionate about teaching character traits at an early age here in middle school. Because we know that, you know, that's what leadership is really founded on, you know, being able to be kind of a lead learner in your own character development is, I think it's everything. I think, you know, you see people that are not, you know, strong leaders and positive leaders, and almost always you can point back to character flaws.
Hmm. I totally agree. That's really powerful. Nobody has said character before. They've listed traits or character traits, but they've never actually said just character as a whole. That's powerful. I remember listening to an interview with John Wooden. One of his big points was making the distinction between reputation and character. And that really stuck with me. This idea that reputation is what other people believe about you, and character is the essence of who you really are deep down. And nobody can take that away from you, and nobody can define that for you. And there's something so powerful in that. And then when you connect that to leadership, I totally agree. People who have a really hard time leading, yeah, you can totally bring it back to the character. So that's great. Thank you. And finally, if you were to print one quote or message onto one of those quote cups sold in big bookstores, what would it be?
I would say, education at its highest level is about helping others find their joy.
I love it. Hans Apple, thank you so much for joining me today. It's been a pleasure. Really, so many nuggets of wisdom and really practical takeaways from this conversation. And I know that listeners will love hearing it. So thank you so much.
Oh, it's been a pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
I want to thank you for the wonderful reviews that you've left for this podcast on iTunes. Your reviews make a big difference in helping other educators find this show. If you think that I'm doing good work here and you'd like others to get inspired and join our 21-day kindness challenge and movement, I'd love it if you would take a minute, head over to iTunes, and leave a review. Thank you so much. This has been another episode of Kindsight 101, the podcast. For links to resources mentioned in this episode, visit smallactbigimpact.com and click on our podcast and choose this episode number. Now, I'd love to give my audience a heads up about my new book, which will provide ideas, actionable strategies, and inquiry-based approaches to creating kinder classroom through serving the community. Subscribe to my blog for more information. Now, I would love to hear from you. What's the biggest insight that you gain from this conversation? Head over to our website, smallactbigimpact.com, leave a comment on our podcast page, or tag and connect with us on social media with the hashtag smallactbigimpact to share your inspiring story of kindness. Can't wait to hear from you.